Welcome to Jackson's American Tales. I'm Jackson Jones. In this podcast, we're going to talk to ordinary people all about their extraordinary life stories. This is going to be a fun one. We've got a very good friend of mine and, honestly, a very good friend to youth sports all around, Coach Jamie Midthin from the Lodi area. And she's going to sit down and talk to us what it's like being a coach in 2018.
The culture of youth sports has changed drastically since I played. I graduated high school in 96 from Wanakee.
She's got a very fun and inspirational story that's chock full of laughs and a few tears.
Thank you for having me in. I'm sure you could probably find more extraordinary coaches or ordinary people. I'm pretty ordinary, though.
You are ordinary, but I like to think that you're pretty extraordinary. I did get a chance to meet a pretty extraordinary coach, Mike McCarthy of the Green Bay Packers. However, what he doesn't have to deal with on a regular basis, children.
Oh, well, yeah, and yeah. Parents of children.
Yes, that is, we're going to get into a lot of that. So, currently, what is your title? What do you do right now?
Right now, I just resigned as the head softball coach over in Lodi.
Okay.
Just kind of need to go in a new direction, step back and reevaluate. The culture of youth sports has changed drastically since I played. I graduated high school in 96 from Wanakee. And
you're older than me?
I am.
You look phenomenal.
I'm going to be 40 in 2 months.
I am haggard. Oh, my God. That's why this is an audio.
Beard.
That's why
it's
this
the
is
beard.
An audio podcast, because I am haggard.
No, it
at
is
best.
The beard. If you look, I got the leather outside all the time face. You don't. If you got rid of the beard, you'd look like a baby again.
If I got rid of the beard, I'd look like a meth dealer. So if I got rid of the beard, the wanted posters that have my real face on there would be useful again.
Right. So, okay, maybe keep the beard. Keep the beard.
So, okay, so you are a youth softball coach. Do you coach any other sports?
I coached tennis for a while. Oh. I'm not sure if I'm going to continue coaching tennis. We're kind of moving in a new direction. There's new stuff on the horizon that
I love that.
It's exciting, and it's going to be a way to do coach the way I want to coach with people who appreciate my style, and I won't have to answer to anybody in particular other than those people that we get this thing started with.
I
can't
love
say a whole lot more than that.
Hey, that's great. No, I love things on the horizon.
It's a teaser.
I love plans. It sounds like you got a recipe. You're getting some ingredients
in place.
We're
getting the ingredients, and hopefully like by this time next year, we'll have something pretty cool. Yeah, we'll have a souffle.
Yeah.
Because that takes a while to cook, right?
Yeah, I think so. I've never made one. It seems like the juice ain't worth a squeeze in one of those.
Right, and I would agree with you.
You ever been to dinner with somebody, and at the end, they're like, hey, I'll take the souffle.
You're like,
you're going to be eating by yourself.
Right.
Because I'm leaving, Grandma.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
This is an iPhone, Grandma. Call an Uber. They'll come get you. Nobody's waiting 45 minutes for your dessert.
Right.
So where are you from?
I am from Wanakee.
Wanakee? The only Wanakee in the world?
The only Wanakee in the world. I was actually born in DeForest, and then we moved to Wanakee when I started third grade.
Now, for those that don't know, DeForest, that's near DeTrees.
It is near, it's right next to DeTrees.
Okay, all right. Because, you might get confused. Like, where is DeForest?
It's right next to, look for DeTrees.
Look for DeTrees, and you're going to find DeForest. So what kind of kid were you?
I think I was a pretty well-behaved kid, but obviously, like, kind of a class clown, too.
A jokester?
Yeah.
Get in trouble a lot?
I was described as squirrely by my geometry teacher. Like at the parent-teacher conference, she's a little squirrely. To be fair, I had geometry after lunch. And it's like feeding a gremlin.
Are those exact words?
Exact words. She's a little squirrely.
Her grades are good, but a smidge squirrely.
Just a little squirrely.
Just a little on the squirrel factor.
Yep.
We have a squirrel rating here, and she's towards the only side of that one. All right. So were you a good student, though?
I was, like, I had a 3.2, 3.5. But I had to work really hard for it. Like, it didn't, math, science didn't come easily to me. So when senior year rolled around and you didn't have, like, my math requirement and science was done, I took an easy route my senior year and actually enjoyed the heck out of it.
There you go. I took a lot of home ec classes my senior year. Four of them.
Which is why you sew right now and you're so crafty right now.
And I can't add.
Right.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what.
See, I can't add or sew.
But,
so,
I can make a meatloaf.
You can make a meat? How do you make a meatloaf?
A meatloaf? Well, I make meatloaf wads.
Ooh.
Yeah. You know what a cupcake tin is?
Yeah.
Of course you do, because your mom's the best baker
right.
in the world, the Vixter.
Exactly.
Shout out. So you
Shout
take
out
that,
to
you take, that, you take that cupcake tin, all right?
Yeah.
Now you grease it up real good, and you get your meatloaf like you normally would, but you start making them into balls.
Oh.
Drop them inside the tin. Don't put the papers in there. Drop inside the tin, all right? Drop your ketchup mixture on top of there.
You hate ketchup.
But it's good with the meatloaf. I mix a little bit of barbecue sauce and hot sauce. That's the only time I eat ketchup is because it bakes on.
Okay. All right.
Because the reason
kind of caramelizes a little bit.
The reason I do this, what is the best part of the meatloaf?
I prefer when meatloaf is dry and it has crackers in it. So I don't know where you're going with this.
What is the best of a meatloaf when you got a whole loaf there and it's being sliced up?
The edge pieces.
The end piece.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. When you make these meatloaf balls.
The whole thing is an end
piece.
The
whole thing's an end piece.
That's brilliant.
See? Honestly. Change the meatloaf game.
You did.
Yep.
You, just like you changed the grilled cheese game. You're
I'm
changing
working
the
on
meatloaf
it.
Game.
I'm working on it. I'm changing my pants because they're getting tighter.
Hey, just sew another button
That's
on.
Exactly why
just
I learned
expand.
How. You take foods one and sewing. They go hand in hand. So now you weren't exactly, you know, a studious person. Is that correct?
Well, I would study, but I wasn't like, I was not going to be the salutatorian or valedictorian. I would, you know. I was a class clown. We liked to pull pranks on our teachers, and we had an epic prank. Our teacher that we had, Spanish teacher, for 4 years, the sweetest lady in the whole world. She's also very orderly and just the most dignified woman you've ever met in your whole life.
Hmm.
And she put up with us for 4 years. In that last year of school, we're like, we have never pranked Senora. We have to prank her. And she's all about order, can't have any mess. Well, we had a bus evacuation drill where everybody gets out of school and they get on the bus and you prepare for, if you're ever on a bus, what's the emergency?
Out the back.
Right.
Yeah.
You go out the back or you try to break a window, whatever. Well, my friend Michael and I had decided this is the day. This is our opening to get Senora. So we both made up reasons, like, we'll come late to the bus evacuation. And God bless this poor woman. She believed us. She was like, oh, okay, well, I'll see you. She trusted that we were actually going where we said we were going.
Mm-mm.
And what we did is we ripped up about 6 million little pieces of paper and scattered them all over the floor. And then we went to the bus evacuation. And everybody in the class knew something was up because the two biggest troublemakers just came late to the bus evacuation. And we get off the bus and we're walking down the hallway and Senora's leading the way and you can tell by the clicking of her heels that she's getting close to the classroom and then she stops and then she panics and then she starts speaking Spanish very loudly and saying that there's been a disaster and everybody back in the room except for the two people who came late. And then we had study hall the rest of the day because it threw her off. She couldn't teach.
That's not a bad gig.
It was awesome. It
was
great.
Nice move.
And people were still talking about that years later, still to this day. But she'll still have coffee with me. That's
respect.
Right.
You got one up on her and she respected you for it.
Right.
Keep that in mind, kids. Prank
prank
your
teachers.
They'll respect you for it.
Right.
You learn that here. And then the more you know.
Right.
So were you into, I'm going to assume here, you were into athletics when you were a kid?
I was, yep.
What were your sports of choice?
Basketball and softball, obviously. Basketball I did first 2 years, and then I realized there's a lot of short kids in my grade, and we can't all be point guards, and I'm definitely not going to be a forward, so I will just kind of manage the team and be the clown of the team and try and keep everybody up and cheery and positive.
And the H2O distribution engineer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fancy for water.
Right.
Person.
Right.
That's good. So did you, now, there was always a stigma with the gal that likes to play sports. Did you compete with the boys? Did you have any problems with that?
I actually played. I remember when we lived in DeForest, my mom was signing us up for summer softball, summer baseball. And I remember telling them, I don't want to play with the girls. They don't know what they're doing. This was like first grade.
Were you a bit more at a higher level than they were?
I was just more aggressive. I played ball. I could have played ball around the clock.
Gotcha.
You know, with the neighborhood kids, we were just like the sandlot. You were out in the street playing ball all the time. And there just weren't a lot of girls that did. So I remember Mr. Jenkins said, yeah, you can be on my team. It also happened to be the team my brother was on. And I don't think he was too thrilled about it.
How much older is he?
He is 3 years older.
Oh, yeah. That's not something you want.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Not
you don't want your little sister. Right.
It's not good for the look.
No.
Yeah.
No. And I don't really remember a whole lot from that season, but I just know I did play with the boys. And then we moved to Wanakee, and it was a little bit different, a little more competitive. So
we had a girl in school that she played with the boys up until 7th or 8th grade. Her name was Jackie Bumgartner, and she could ball.
Yeah.
And there was nobody that could disagree with her being up there, because like, she's better than half the guys that were on the team.
Right.
So go ahead and shut your face when you're over
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
Why is she in and your son riding the bench? Because your son sucks. Jackie's up there ripping
she's
dingers.
She's legit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack and Taters. Yeah.
So you fell in love and did you play softball all then through high school?
Yep, I did. And it was kind of a game that I learned from my dad. He played slow pitch for a while, was a pitcher, played many years, many nights of the week, and so you just kind of grew up at the ballpark, and you were there 4 or 5 nights a week or weekend tournaments, and yeah, I fell in love with it. So
I think there's some kids that now they have iPhones and iPads and they can be preoccupied, but I think that they don't understand the beauty and the pain in the ass of being at a softball diamond with your dad. The sun's down. You want to go home. He's drinking some beers with his buddies in the parking lot. Please just go home.
Yeah.
Now.
But I can see it in, you know, all the years I've coached. I think it's 13 years now over the last 20 since I've graduated, 22. I can see that not a lot of kids are going to watch their dads at the ballpark, because that ball sense just isn't there. And for the longest time, I thought, why, how do they not know where to go with the ball right now at this age? And then I thought, well, I learned it from watching my dad when I was a little kid. And you're absolutely right. They're preoccupied with social media, cell phones, friends, and it just doesn't happen. It's not that culture has changed so much that kids aren't just hanging out with families down at the ballpark.
So did you work any jobs while you were in high school or anything like that? Or did you just did you get to play sports?
I played sports, but I actually, junior and senior year, I worked at the local Sentry.
Oh, what did you do there?
I was a checker. And basically everybody in Wanakee either worked at Sentry or Piggly Wiggly. But Sentry was the number one.
That was the higher end.
The higher end.
If you're working over Sentry, you're like, yo.
Right, yo. You got street cred there.
Were you a good checker?
Was
speed your game? Because I used to work for Cops when Cops was here.
Oh, yeah.
And we used to keep ratings in the employee break room of who the fastest checkers
really?
Were. And if
we
you're
didn't
gonna
have
start,
that at Sentry.
If you're going to start rating things, you're about to see some serious, and there was no bonus for it. I just wanted
you
my
just
name.
Wanted.
I just
I'm
wanted
the
my
fastest.
Name at the top of that list every single chance that I got, and I went. Boop, 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 boop. I mean, it was.
But were you also accurate in bagging, or did you not have to worry about bagging?
I didn't bag anything. I had a bagger for me.
There was a bagger there. You were just checking.
Boop, 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 boop. You got to keep up in there. Now there are rules, and I still even when I go to the grocery store now. If, like, I go to Hy-Vee a lot. Love Hy-Vee. Hy-Vee, if you're listening, you're wonderful. I hear there's one coming to Wanakee.
Oh, that would be the best.
And sometimes they'll have 8 lanes open, but 5 baggers. You know, I'm moving around. I'll tell them a lot of times, hey, go there and help somebody else.
I'll bag.
I got this.
Me too.
Yeah,
I do that all the time.
Take it easy. I can return my basket over there. I got this. I know what I'm doing.
Right.
And I used to be really good. However, if you came into my line and you had attitude with you, well, that loaf of bread's going underneath the 2-liter.
Right.
I was working one day, and there was a lady that was just giving her kids what for. And I'd had enough of it. And she had 2 loaves of bread, and I put them in the bottom of the bag, and I held up 2 liters of Coke and dropped them on top of the bread and then just sat her over there. Like, you're not going to find that out till you get home.
Right.
All your PB&J sandwiches are smashed.
Or smushed.
Now, of course, the kids probably got punished for that and made their life a little bit worse, but
way
I felt
go.
Pretty good about it.
You felt good. We actually, one of my favorite Sentry stories, working a Friday night with my best friend in high school, And she's kind of the manager. Like, she's so good at her job that they made her a manager. Like, a senior in high school, you're the night manager. You watch out for it. So it's 5 to 9, and a lady comes in and grabs a card. We close at 9. And I'm like, I could just see it. It was going down. Jenny was not having it.
Yep.
She came flying out of the office, and she grabs the cart. So, pardon me, ma'am, you won't be needing this. And then pushed it back in with the rest of the carts. And I'm sitting there like, there's a surveillance camera right there watching you. That lady just kind of turned white. And then she turned and walked out.
You gotta know, you can't go to the store five. That's like, I used to deliver pizzas. We would get guys that would call. The pizza, we stopped delivering pizzas at 2 a.m. We could do what they would call at 1:55. It's like, come on, bro.
Oh, I was like, totally with her.
It's going to take forever to cook the food, then drive it there, and then I got a restaurant to clean. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. But I looked at him like, Jenny, you can't do that. She's like, well, do you want to be out of here at 9:02, or do you want to be out of here at 9:30? I'm like, point taken.
Don't come back. That's what you say. Dan, you don't come back.
You're not. Well, your kind isn't welcome here.
When I worked at a grocery store, I used to run. I did a lot of stuff. I was working the service desk and things like that, too. But then I also sometimes you would have to run the express lane.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I ran the express lane with an iron fist. It was 10 items. If you had 10
if
and a half.
If you have 11, get out of here with that nonsense.
I don't care if you have 20 items and they're all the same thing and you're going to try to say that's one item.
No.
Oh, the 20 cans? No.
Nope. Sorry about that. Because it's individual items.
So I had a guy come into my lane one time and he had not a full cart, but he had over 10 items.
Right.
And I had nobody in my lane and he thought he could just come in there. And I went,
back that up.
Can't do that. And he goes, why? I said, well, this is the express lane. You clearly have more than the express lane needs to have, that, you know, that can handle.
Right.
So you have to go to another lane. He goes, yeah, but you don't have anybody here. And I went, yeah, but what if I start checking you out?
Right.
Somebody comes up behind you.
With a carton of milk.
Exactly. And he goes, well, I spent a lot of money here. I love that. I spent a lot of money here.
Oh, well, then by all means, make the rules.
Yeah. So I said, well, so do a lot of people. Then he did this. Grabbed a package of deli ham and threw it at me.
No.
Hit me in the chest with a package of deli ham and then bowled a cantaloupe at me.
No.
Yeah. So I grabbed the cantaloupe. I was a pretty big kid at the time. I grabbed the cantaloupe and I went, get the out of the store. And he goes, what? I'm like, get the out of here. I said, do you think we need you? There's 200 people in this store right now. Get the hell out. And then I got sent home that day.
But did you get to come back?
Yeah. Actually, they weren't firing me.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you were good at your job.
And it took too long to train people. And I was at the top of that speedy check.
Right. Right.
So after high school, did you go to college?
I went to UW-Stevens Point for my first year, and I loved it, had a blast. But there was something that I just knew I wasn't going to finish there.
Okay.
And I knew deep down that I wanted to coach.
What were you going to school for?
Communications. So I actually ended up getting a degree from UW-Madison in communication arts.
What is a communications degree? I think
my emphasis was radio, TV, film.
Really?
And the year I finished, the next year is when they made the conversion to digital. So everything I learned is completely useless now.
Well, we have some stuff downstairs, you know, like some antiquated systems that we still have here.
I can probably figure that out. Right.
As you can clearly tell, I did not go to school for communications.
But you have the best voice and personality for it, so.
And I have secrets on everybody else.
Oh.
That's what it is.
Like, so that's how it came down to.
Oh, yeah, secrets. Like, oh, but, and they're like, oh, yeah. Well, we'll give you a menial raise, and you can come in and do this job. And I'm like, fantastic. I'll grow a beard. That'll be great. So where did you go after you did the one, you say 1 year or one semester?
One year at UW-Stevens Point. Nice. And actually, I went up the second year was supposed to start there. And I remember the only good thing about going back to school that year was that I got out of helping with tobacco harvest because we were farm family. We raised tobacco.
Oh, you're tobacco farmers?
Yeah.
Chaw tobacco?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
A lot of people don't know this. It's a big industry in South Central Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yep.
There's
like Stoughton area, there's absolutely a ton. We had like 30 acres of it I was younger. And that's why I have a bad back now. That's why everybody in my family has bad backs.
It's called tobacco back.
Right.
I made that up.
You did, but it's good.
Sounds
you should
good,
coin
though.
It sounds legit.
What's wrong with Jamie? Tobacco back.
Tobacco back.
Really? My uncle had that.
Tobacco back.
Exactly. See? That's kind of why the words came together. Communications degree.
Bingo.
Ha. Yeah, you don't get that with a communications degree.
No, you don't.
No, you don't.
No.
All right.
So I went back. I drove myself up the second year, had a car full of all the stuff, and I just, there was something that was like, no, this isn't right. I was miserable. It was the first time I ever had a panic attack. I'm like, I just don't want to be here. I don't want to do this. This is not for me. And by the end of the week, I had the car packed, pulled back in the driveway, and my parents are like, oh, you really did. You really came home. You really packed it up. And so I did, and I took a chance, applied at UW-Madison, hoping that I'd get in the spring semester, and rolled the dice, got a job delivering subs, and took some classes at MATC, and lo and behold, everything worked out. I got accepted to Madison, and that's where I finished.
You finished up at UW-Madison?
Yeah.
So I don't say that because I don't say
you're
it was surprised.
Surprised because
no,
you think I'm a dum-dum.
No. I literally don't. And I argue this a lot with people. A little bit. I argue this a lot with people. People don't realize we live here in Wisconsin, and I think that we take it for granted that legit, one of the finest academic institutions on earth.
Right.
Like, legit.
Right.
Really is. And I'm always very impressed by people who are able, because my wife works, and they won't even let me visit her at work. That's how low my grade point average was. They're like, hey, you're making other people dumb by osmosis. I knew that word.
You're not dumb. If you know osmosis.
I just play one on TV. Osmosis Jones. It's a good movie. I think I made that up too. But anyway, so UW. So what were you studying at UW?
Communications.
Okay, back in the communications.
Yep. So and then I got a minor in folklore. Believe it or not.
Hang on.
Yeah, I'm not making it up.
What is folklore?
I took a class because I'm like, I need at least an easy class. And this seems like storytelling and stuff. And I was right. It was different cultures telling their stories. And I ended up loving that and loving the professor, James Leary. I think he's still a professor at Madison.
Of folklore.
And he is the most amazing. Like, you should have him on here because that dude has amazing stories.
Really? So it's.
And like, I took so
like
many
campfire
classes.
Campfire stories? Like, what is it?
Like,
I caught a
history,
fish one time that was this big.
No, it's more like different cultures and how their rituals and stuff came to be and why they're important to them.
Did you study Paul Bunyan? Is that folklore?
I believe that was part of it. Like, Wisconsin history, that was another part of it. And they were just fun classes, and they were easy A's for me because I found that stuff enjoyable. And so they're like, we can give you it's a certificate, but it's basically a minor in folklore.
So you continually have gone for communications. Did you have a desire to, what was your goal with that communications degree? Did you want to be on air? Did you want to be behind the scenes? What did you want to do?
I think more like behind the scenes. I didn't really want to be like a news anchor or anything. And then once I got the degree, I kind of realized that I'd get crap hours at the TV station, basically like Channel 21 doing the telethon, but I'm working like the worst shifts possible. And so I haven't really done a ton with that.
Was it sports broadcasting that drove into that? I mean, was there any like mix like, hey, maybe I could be like a sports, or maybe I could be like the new Vince Scully or anything like,
no,
you know?
I think it was more just like the aspect of, you know, screenwriting kind of movies and TV, just telling the story that way.
So you got a creative side to you then.
I do, yeah. A little bit.
Something I didn't know. You discovering
did not.
Things about
right.
the friends over
right.
here.
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So you finished UW, and what did you do after that?
I was right in the peak of the first series of coaching that I did. So I coached softball, and that was part of why I transferred to. I knew I wanted to coach, and I knew I wanted to coach softball with the guy that coached me. So he's kind of my mentor, and he called me in 1999, said, hey, I need a JV coach. Do you want to do it? Absolutely.
And where was this at?
At Wanakee High School.
In Wanakee, okay.
Yep.
And they got a good sports program over there.
Yeah, they do. And he, you know, he's just one of the best coaches. He's in the Coaching Hall of Fame for football and for softball here in Wisconsin. So,
and who better to learn from?
Right. He's a great guy, totally like a second dad. So I thought, yeah, I'll absolutely do it. And in that time, I'm like, yeah, this is what I was put here to do. I need to be coaching. I need to, because I never felt more sure of myself than taking that field and with those kids. And I mean, we had a doubleheader. The very first games I ever coached, it was a doubleheader. We won the first one, lost the second one, and won the next 18 after that.
Wow.
So it was a pretty successful run, and I know it's JV, and it's a world of difference between JV and varsity, but it was the bug that I had. And I'm like, I need to keep doing this because I finally feel like, yeah, I'm good at this.
Well, people say, oh, it's JV, but it's not like you're running a varsity team against other JV. You're playing at the competitive level
right. That
you're at. Just like
right.
if somebody wins a tournament in the NIT, doesn't take anything away from it. They played other
right. Players
at that level. You are the best at the level that you're at.
Right.
So you obviously have an ability to bring something out of
yeah. Somebody
to get that from them.
Yep. So did that. And then just, you know, odd jobs in between there because it's a hard schedule. And it would probably have been easier if I would have just gone into teaching like everybody suggested. But I just, and even now, people are like, well, why don't you go back and get your teaching degree or at least get your subbing degree? And I feel like pushing 40, if I was really, really going to be a teacher, I would have been it by now.
There's nothing wrong with getting your sub degree. My mom went back and got her sub degree. And you should deliver subs.
Yeah, so it's kind of you'd think.
Yeah,
I'll have to look into that. See if there's a correlation there between the two.
What do you have to do to get your sub degree? Learn how to operate a VCR? Like, is that really?
You know, you just need to learn how to punch it in on the old computer.
That's
now.
What it is now. You got to figure out how to pull up a YouTube video
right. And
to figure out which kid is
right. Not,
you know, Pat farts in my mouth. Because, like, you know, hopefully kids still do that. Like, I'm giving out fake names today.
Oh, yeah. I was the foreign exchange student the one day. Because I sat in the
English.
Exactly. From now on, I was known as Kimiko. Because I was sitting in her spot talking to my friend, and the teacher marked me absent, but Kimiko was there. Well, I'm Kimiko. So that's probably why I don't want to teach, because I would have to teach kids like me.
I had a teacher that I told her that I preferred to go by my middle name, which is Bradshaw. Okay.
For real?
Yeah, that legit is my middle name.
Okay.
My dad wanted to name me Terry Bradshaw Jones because we're big Steeler fans.
Right.
But thankfully he didn't. No offense if you're a guy and your name is Terry. I don't want that name. That's a road I don't need to plow. But I told the teacher, I like to be called Bradshaw. And she was new. It was her first year in school. Everybody calls me Bradshaw. Well, that totally effed her up. Because anytime, and I was a problem.
Oh,
anytime
yeah,
she'd be talking like Bradshaw Jones, they'd be like, who are you talking about? And they're like, Bradshaw. And like, we don't have a kid in our school that has that Vesta. Two last names. Who's got two last names?
Right.
So, yeah, but the whole time I had her, I made her call me Bradshaw because I was that kind of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, being a teacher is not something I could, honestly. I don't even know how it is that you do that being in being a coach. I mean, what's it like that first day? You're on the JV. It's your first day coaching, and you got to go. It's practice. Like, how nervous were you?
I think it... I was still young enough, like I was still in college at that time. So the kids I had, I was probably 3.5 years older then.
Did that make you more nervous? Did that make you less nervous?
I think it made me less nervous at the time until the one kid, we were talking after practice about, you know, different stuff. And, you know, I had the same teachers they were having. So they were asking questions about when I was in high school and what I was like.
Exam papers?
Right. Stuff like that. And I had mentioned that, yeah, that teacher had given me a hall pass and I had it for the whole year. And the kid looked at me and they're like, you had hall passes back when you were in high school?
Oh, no.
And I'm like, yes. And then we played with the dinosaurs and it was a sad, sad day when they went extinct. Like,
and then TV was invented.
Right. And we drove to school, you know, in our covered wagons. And
walked uphill both ways.
Both ways, no shoes, you know.
Snowed all the time.
Like, I am 3 years older than you. Where are you coming at me with that stuff? So it was, you know, I was nervous, and actually I did have like that whole season. I tried to act like it wasn't a big deal, but at the time it was a huge deal, and I was super nervous. And the more we won, the more nervous I got, to where I was having panic attacks during games.
Really? Why?
Because I think it was, I need to prove that I'm not just a goofball that I was in high school or the class clown. Like, I wanted to be taken seriously, and I thought, you know, the more we won, the more it would show that, yeah, I actually have kind of that serious, capable side, too. I don't just have to make jokes. I don't just have to, you know, be the screwball. But it eventually kind of went away. I just didn't eat a whole lot because I was always nervous. And it was probably way better for my waistline. Yeah. I wish I could get nervous like that now.
nervously losing weight. I could see, honestly, how that would be nerve-wracking because, you know, a lot of jobs are performance-based, but none more than anything in the athletics. Because right. if you can't do anything for me right now to help me win, then we're wasting money on you.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Now, is this a full-time gig? Were you working other jobs?
Just working other jobs at,
okay.
you know, different, nothing really like too serious. I'd mow lawns and do landscaping. Odds and ends. And then, you know, when I started coaching in Lodi, I started working through the school district. It's CREW is what it was called, Community Resource Enrichment and Wellness. Still do work through them
mm-hmm.
now, teach summer school now also there. But with CREW, it was more like kind of a, if you had a village center where you have your after school activities and whatnot, we kind of plan all of those and programs gotcha. And different stuff that kids can sign up for. But it's all basically based around being active and moving and that kind of stuff.
So question, you said that a little too late in life to become a substitute, a little too late in life to become a teacher, but you're teaching summer school. What am I missing here?
Okay, my classes that I teach for summer school are tennis and softball. So
Okay.
So they've made those classes. But like some of the summer school classes
is it taught in a classroom?
Nope, we go out to the tennis courts and play, and then we go out to the softball field and play. But like, used to be if you had to do summer school, it wasn't fun stuff. Like
I know,
it was remedial math. It was something science.
It was world history, Mr. Shetler.
Right.
Yeah, I know you're listening.
Yeah.
You know what you did.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could remember my summer math teacher's name. Can't remember it, but I know I had to take it, and I know I was miserable.
Yeah, not fun. I had mono during summer school.
I got chicken pox my freshman year, last week of school, missed all my finals.
Really?
Yeah.
Bonus.
Right. My brother got them, actually. He was a senior when I was a freshman. He got them his senior year, last week of school.
That's late to get chicken pox. It's getting towards a dangerous area there.
Right.
Back in the day, yeah, there was no, you know, keep in mind, there was no shot back in the day for us.
Right.
If one of your friends had chicken pox, you go, your parents would rub you up against each other.
Yeah, exactly. Because you better get that.
Go get the chicken pox now.
Go get it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh. So when did you get your first gig in Lodi? What year was that? Do you remember?
That would have been 2014.
Okay. And is that a full-time position?
No. So that's when I started working with CREW. But I started coaching JV there. And then the head coach retired or resigned mm-hmm. after the season. He's like, you clearly want this. I'm just doing this. So, you know, have at it. And at that time, it was just some dirt and four bases. We didn't even have a permanent fence.
Really?
The dugouts looked like they were brown and orange. Our school colors are blue and white.
Huh.
So I, a bit naively and optimistically, thought, yeah, I can do this, and I will change the culture of this. I just severely underestimated how long it would take, because this is a program that had not won in a decade. You know?
And Lodi is doing good now. The town's doing good now.
Yeah.
But, and not that it wasn't doing good, but it was.
That program was kind of neglected.
And just the town, it wasn't. It's been booming the last few years.
Yeah.
That wasn't something that was going on when we were younger.
Right.
Like that Lodi was like it was Lodi. You know, it was, you know, just a little town.
Yeah.
But now there's, it's economically doing really well.
Nice
houses out there.
Beautiful.
Nice families moving out of the town. That kind of opens the door for some of those things to happen. But if the program's being neglected, they're not allocating money to it, what are you going to do?
Right. And so that was kind of our first step. I'm like, we need to get an actual fence up. Like, there was a fence, but it was built by the tech ed department and went up at the beginning of the season and down at the end of the season. And I'm like, well, we need it. So we made the improvements, and we got a permanent fence and a new batting cage and batting stations and a handicap accessible path up to the field, and painted the dugouts to look like our school colors. And, you know, we did a lot in 4 years.
it was only 4 years that you were there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. If you haven't been to Lodi, it's been a while that you have, go check out their athletic fields. That they have a really nice athletic program now. Yeah. And for a town that I never, until I went there the first time, I went, oh, damn, it's Lodi? You're not your bad self. Okay, Lodi, right. I see you.
Right,
but
right.
Honestly, it may take you a while, but good work on that.
Yeah. And also, you know, we also fought for new tennis courts, too, because the courts we had were falling apart, and there was talk that, well, we'll just cut the program then. Because
that seems reasonable.
If it's going to cost us, you know, $150,000 to redo the courts. Do we have that money, especially if a referendum doesn't pass? Maybe we should cut the program. And our kids heard that and they were crushed because for a lot of these kids, that was their only sport. That was their number one sport. And I remember going with our number one singles player to the school board meeting and sitting in saying, there's talk that maybe just cut the program. And no, that was never on the agenda. I'm like, okay, but if it was or if it is ever considered in the future, I want to know what boys' sport you're going to cut. Because Title IX dictates if you get rid of a girls' sport, you got to get rid of a boys' sport too.
Good play.
And
good
they
play.
They need to be in here fighting for themselves then, because they need to know that they're on the chopping block as well.
Yeah.
And within probably 45 minutes, I think they decided, yeah, we're going to redo the courts. And so we have beautiful new tennis courts now because our kids fought for what they believed in and had adults behind them that also believed in what they were doing and thought that they were worth that money.
You know, they had good leadership as well, is what it is. And as somebody set an example, and someone who cared about what it is that they did. I know you don't want to take a compliment on that, but you're going to. Because, I mean, honestly, that is, without someone being an advocate for those kids can go to all the school board meetings they want. They're just kids.
Right.
You know, I mean, sit down and shut up.
That's, right.
You know, but if you've got someone who, A, has a record of winning, A, has a record of showing that they care about their community and being an upstanding person on the side of these kids, that carries a lot of clout with it. And that really is a big accomplishment because People are stingy these days.
Yeah.
We don't get political on here, and this really isn't political, but I don't understand anybody ever voting no on a school referendum.
Right.
I don't care if they want more money for garbage bags.
Give
I don't
it to
care.
Them.
Say,
Give it to
say
them.
Yes.
Yes.
Like, it's for a school.
Right.
Like, come on.
Right.
Every single adult I know, all my friends, when we went to school, we're like, man, this school sucks. There's nothing here. You know, and now that when we're adults, we're like, well, we're not voting for that. Why do you think the school sucked?
Right.
Because we didn't want to fund it. All right.
Exactly.
Stop doing that.
Stop doing it. Break that cycle and put the money there, you know, and vote people in that care about
it. Help kids get active. Help kids do things. You know,
exactly.
You know, this is a conversation for another day, but New Glarus is going through this right now.
Where
they want to get rid of
Garner Park.
They want to get rid of the only Little League diamond in town so that they can build a library. Here's the deal. Books are phenomenal. I'm sure the people that are into them love books. That's great. Some of my best friends are books. Awesome.
No,
okay.
They're not.
You know, no, they're not at all. However, nobody ever got a pizza party for hitting a home run in books.
Right.
Nobody ever 100%. Has. No one has a trophy on their shelf for reading a bunch of books.
Right.
And also, I have a cell phone sitting in front of me. Okay. I can hold more books on that cell phone than 50 libraries can. But you know what I can't do on that? I can't play baseball on
right.
that. I can't get a workout on that.
Right. Can't be physically active on that phone.
There's plenty of words. Social media is full of words right now. And you know, not to say there's anything wrong with education, but we got plenty of places to get books nowadays.
Right.
Even libraries are actually converting them to digital. That's what my wife does, is convert books to digital copies because the paper ain't going to be around forever.
Right.
Well, it won't do any good if those kids can't walk to the library because they have no physical activity.
Like, right.
It's not going to do any good.
Right. Yeah, I did see that, and it's sad because that's a great park. We've played on it several times.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
And it's a small town. They don't have a lot of stuff out there in the
right.
country. I'm from that area. They just don't.
No.
And it's a very hilly area, too. It's the only flat piece of ground that you can do that. cut a hole in the side of the hill and put a book in there. There's your library. You know, plant a bunch of little libraries around town.
I was gonna say the little free libraries.
Little free libraries are everywhere.
Just put them up all around town.
Yeah, what the hell? You know,
reach out to Reach a Child. They probably got books that they can give you too.
Reach a Child. They just gave New Players a bunch of books.
I actually worked for them for a while.
Did you really?
Yeah,
they're
that was
wonderful.
One of the gigs.
Man,
yeah,
my nonprofit donated to them. That's a very wonderful organization.
I did see that
right
too.
There.
Yeah.
So now, why tennis? How come? What's up with the tennis? Why did you play tennis?
I did not, and that's the kind of funny thing with how I stumbled into coaching tennis. I heard Wanakee was looking for somebody to help with their JV tennis team because they had 36 kids on JV tennis.
Wow!
So that's a lot for one person to manage and handle.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, you know, I never played tennis at all, and they're like, yeah, we really just need you. It's like herd cats. Make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. Watch some Pete Sampras YouTube videos. See what you can pick up. All right, cool. I'll do it.
Should watch John McEnroe.
Oh,
those are the videos you watch.
Yeah.
Get out of here. Yep.
Oh, and that's probably how I would have been as a player. So I can get it.
Johnny Mac.
Yeah. So I said, yep, I'll do it. And it was one of the best decisions I had ever made. One of the luckiest things I ever stumbled into, because that tennis program this was in Wanakee at the time, and some of the nicest people I've ever met. Steve Stricker's daughter is one of those kids. She's a great kid. The Chorney.
Dad's a world class athlete.
Right.
She's got to be a really good and a wonderful person.
She's phenomenal. Just a great, so many great families there that I met. And It was awesome. I didn't know anything about it, but they embraced me. I embraced it, and I learned a ton, and then kind of decided I'm going to go to Lodi, and that was probably going to be a one-time thing with tennis. But it was great. What a perfect experience I had with it.
Yeah.
And I kind of closed the door on it. Then, as I'm in Lodi for a year, and they just opened up the head coaching of softball position, and I knew they were going to be interviewing for that. And I got a call on, I believe it was August 10th of, would have been 2014. Hey, we need a JV tennis coach. We know you have tennis coaching experience. Would you do it? I'm like, I don't know. I never really played, and I really didn't. It was just herding cats to me at that point. So, okay, how long do I have to think about it? Well, the season starts tomorrow, so if you can make a decision quick, that'd be awesome. So I'm like, all right, I'll do it. Just remember who's helping you out right now, and in a month when that softball position needs interviews, you just keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's right. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours kind of thing.
So,
nothing wrong with that.
Right. We did it, and it was another great experience. Tennis is a very cool sport because it's cut and dry. If I think I should be the one singles player, but I'm not, I'm the two singles player, I just challenge that one singles to a match, and if she wins, she gets to keep the spot, and I stay where I am.
Huh.
So it's easy to coach. It shouldn't say that because there's strategies.
Well, yeah, but still.
But it's so objective. Like, you want it, you earn it, and you get it then.
Now, I think this is the number one question that everybody has when it comes to tennis, and I'm sure you've gotten this question 1,000 times. Yellow or green? Is it yellow?
I say
yellow.
Or
is it green? You say yellow?
I say yellow.
Man.
I
want to say green. My brain wants to say the ball is green.
But it's an excellent question because it's not yellow, but it's also
it's
green.
It's neither one of them. It's
like
mystery and a conundrum.
It is. It totally is. It's its own color. It's tennis ball yellow is what we say.
Some kind of wizard made that color up, and now we got a big debate
just,
there.
Yeah, for sure. But it was fun to coach, and there's always, like, depending on how many courts you're playing at, like, you could have 8 matches going on at a time. So you can't get too invested in a match because you got 7 other ones to watch and coach those kids. So it was a good fit for me. I didn't know a ton about it, but I did know strategy, and I understand strategy. So I would go out, you know, during the changeovers and talk to the kids and be like, hey, she better at her backhand or her forehand. And the kid would stop and think about it for a while. And yeah, she's not good at her backhand. Okay, then pepper her backhand. And they'd look at you like, that's amazing advice. And I'd walk off the court thinking, I am good.
Baller.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they'd go on like a 4-point tear. And I'm like, yeah, It must be the coaching.
Check that weakness. Well, hey, you're pointing out things. What is your point? Things that they don't think about. Your job is to show them the obvious they're not seeing. Try easier.
Right. Right.
So, and what is the most difficult part about being a youth coach?
Oh, this is the question I get asked, honestly, the most. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to answer without upsetting people.
Yes. You know who you are.
It's the parents. This culture has become so different that everybody has to be equal and and I'm all for fair, but it's more equitable. Like it makes more sense to me than everybody gets the same thing. Like if you and I were going to stand to try and look, you know, over a fence. Mm-hmm. You're taller than I am, so you would need a shorter stool to look over the fence. I need a taller one. So the equitable way would be I get a taller one, you get what you need, I get what I need.
Okay.
Fair would be you get this size stool and I get the exact same one. So for me, it comes down to what's equitable. Everybody wants to say, that's not fair. My kid didn't get this and you gave it to this kid. We got to coach based on what they need versus what fair is.
Have you had to deal with parents that are, I'm guessing what the problem is my kid special, my kid is this, my kid needs this, and you need to treat my kid this way, and you're not allowed to talk to him like this, and you're not allowed to say that. Is it a lot of that?
It's a ton of that. And it used to be, you know, the common catchphrase was helicopter parenting. And we still have that. That still exists where, you know, we got to make sure I got to bring Susie's water bottle to her because she forgot. And I'm going to do that. And now I'm going to hover and just make sure all of her needs are met. But now we've kind of the trend, it seems to be that we're more snowplow parenting where we're going to clear the path so that my little kid never has one obstacle to overcome because that wouldn't be fair if she has to overcome an obstacle.
And we're going
to
bulldoze everybody else in the way. If you're in the way, you're out of the way now because my kid is special.
Right, right. And my kid needs this.
And that's making the kids better, right?
Right.
Yeah. That's making them.
It's preparing them for nothing because the real world does not operate like that.
You know what I think is funny is that a lot of people, and I'm one of them, and I've said it before, it took me a little while to realize it, where they're going, man, these kids today, they just don't know what's going on. Man, these kids today, they just don't know this. Do you know why they don't know any of that? Because of the parents.
Right.
We did this. Right. I'm 38 years old. My mom and dad did it a little bit, okay?
Right.
But my generation, our generation, our people that have kids right now that we graduated with, we are the ones that created this. Because this wasn't going on when I was in high school.
Right.
There wasn't anybody plowing a way for me to get through.
Well, if you didn't, I distinctly remember going home heartbroken that I didn't get the starting spot for softball. I wanted that starting spot. I thought it was mine. And my dad just looked at me. Did you do your best? Well, yeah. Okay, well, then keep working hard and be a good teammate. And that was it.
I had a girl break up with me one time, and I was heartbroken, literally. And my mom said to me, I'm surprised she dated you as long as she did. So, it's like the other one that had like parents plowing them. I had people cutting tree limbs down and dropping them in front of me.
Right.
You know, but that's honestly, you know, like that's something that, you know, your dad taught you a good lesson there. My daughter is in a theater camp, and every year she goes out, Children's Theater Madison, little plug there. Every year she goes out and she tries for the main role. She goes for the big role. Now, she hasn't had any real outside, other than this camp, any outside theater experience.
Sure.
And I told her, I said, you go and you shoot for the stars. However, if you don't get it, you're not allowed to cry.
Right.
There's no crying because you're now a role player and you are a cog in that watch.
Yep.
And you're going to make that thing go around. And the first audition came around and she didn't get the part. And I was heartbroken.
Right.
I was crushed inside because I wanted
natural.
It for.
Natural. Absolutely.
And then I called the theater and I screamed. No.
Right.
That's what I said, why do you have two lead parts?
You should be fired.
Exactly. No, I told her, I said, did you cry? And she goes, on the inside. And I went, okay.
Girl.
All right. And she goes, boy, there was a boy. He didn't get the part he went for and he cried on the outside. And I went, well, we learned a lesson there
right.
on that, you know?
Who looked better?
Absolutely. And I said, look, you will learn something from
yes.
losing. You learn from
right.
something not working out. You
right.
don't always you, learn from success.
Right. You learn from hardship. You learn
That's
from
right.
overcoming an obstacle. You know, it's life isn't easy. Life isn't fair. And if we don't prepare them for that now, and what better place than in a softball game that in the grand scheme of things isn't going to matter 10 years down the road. It's really not if you win or lose. So if you learn something there or you fail there, what better place to fail and get that experience and learn from it than there at this age?
Yeah, absolutely.
Than
the lesson
trying
that
to
you
figure
learn.
It out. You know, when you're 24 and you go to your first job interview and you think you should be the CEO instead of the floor sweeper.
And you don't even get the job at all. Wait a minute,
right.
what's wrong with me?
Right.
No, identity crisis.
I'm going to call call mom and dad and have them call the company and get them fired.
That's
or
how
yell
I got this
them.
Job.
Is it?
My mom called Fletch.
Oh,
yep.
man.
And she
Vixter,
was like,
Vixter,
you
hear
put
that?
My son on the radio? And he went, oh, my God.
Oh, well, Vixter's got some calls to make this afternoon because I'm coming for your job tomorrow.
You know, I do think, and I know I only know your mom a little bit. I haven't really spent a lot of time, you know, with you. But I know that you're good people and you have
Thank
a good
you.
Upbringing. And obviously you learned a lot from your parents. And I want to talk about something that might get a little emotional, but I want to talk about
sure.
your dad.
Yeah.
I never really got a chance to meet him. I met your mom a few times.
Yeah.
But he obviously was a very big role in your life. And that really had an effect on how it is you turned out. We see that when dads aren't around,
right.
there's problems
right.
in the world.
Right.
There honestly is.
Mm-hmm.
Intact families are really where it's at. Keep
yeah.
your families intact. And your family was right there. But you guys lost your father. So talk
yeah.
a little bit about your dad and the impact that he had on your life.
Sure.
Maybe why you are the person you are because of him.
He was, you know, he was kind of a quiet guy when you first met him. But then once, like, he was comfortable or he was with his friends, he was kind of that jokester, that life of the party. Everybody loved and everybody had and has great memories of him. He worked like a dog. He worked a full-time job as an electrician at Del Monte, and then he worked at the feed mill in Arlington. For those were the two jobs he had.
And he was a veteran, too, correct?
Yes. He served in Vietnam.
Wonderful.
And then he also farmed on the side. So this is a guy who would get 2 hours of sleep at night because he had to get up and go to the main job and then stay up as soon as he got home farming, you know, getting the crops in, making sure the tobacco was where it needed to be. So he was, you know, I got that work ethic from him and my mom both, like, work hard for what you want.
Did your mom work or was she a stay-at-home mom?
She worked, and then she would, like, she took care of kids, she did some babysitting, but she also, like, was the manager of the tobacco beds.
Okay,
and
she ran that end
so
of it.
So she did all
yeah.
kinds of stuff
gotcha.
There and was the primary cook for when we had, tobacco harvest, everybody came and everybody knew they were going to. We had people that would come and work, and it's horrible work. It's awful work.
Oh, I bet.
But they would work because they knew they'd get a meal or two of the Vixers. And she made food for an army.
She's good. She's
yeah.
good. I've had her food.
She
good.
Is amazing. And the two of them together, you know, was it a perfect marriage? Absolutely not. I'm sure there were times they wanted to kill each other. But they loved each other so much, and they loved each other through so much hardship. And in 1995, he was doing electrical work at the feed mill where he worked. And he went from the top of one grain bin, he's going across the catwalk to get to the other side to do more on that bin. Well, the catwalk had been installed that morning, and they didn't install it properly at the other end. So it gave way, and he fell about 20, 25 feet, and it crushed his lower back like
oh my
an accordion.
God.
And that was kind of like one of those moments that defines your family, like before and after, before
yeah.
the accident, after the accident. So he had a lot of issues with his back and back pain and pain meds and all that. And it changed him for many years dealing with that. And eventually he just couldn't farm anymore. So he sold the farm and then he ended up, he was working at Skyline Steel doing railings and stuff like that, finally kind of retired from that. But the back issues that he had still from the accident, he actually, that's how he died. He He had Agent Orange exposure. They've since discovered from Vietnam. So he had a whole bunch of health issues from that: diabetes, heart disease, neuropathy. So he was, getting all kinds of treatment for that. But he had gone to the VA on February 29th. So the last leap year we had, so 2016, he had gone on leap day for an epidural steroid injection, just to help with the back pain, because it was just something he always had to deal with.
Yeah.
And they did the injection, and when they pulled the needle out, he had a massive heart attack.
Is that common?
No, it was, and we weren't sure, like, what happened. And for the first few weeks after it, I was so angry. Like, dude, you couldn't have just dealt with the back pain for a few more. Like, if you had, you'd still be here. But then we got the results from the autopsy, and it was like, that had nothing to do with it.
That heart attack was coming.
It was coming. He was a ticking time bomb. And, you know, the day before, him and my mom had been out, you know, going for a ride together, just driving around the countryside, and he always drove. So it very easily could have happened then. And then he kills somebody else, or he kills both of them, you know, because it happened when he's driving. So this ended up, like, we had some comfort then knowing that it wasn't because of the injection. It had nothing to do with it. He was just fortunate enough that it was at the hospital when it happened.
Did you get a chance to say goodbye, or is it, I mean, was it?
It was it. And I, you know, I remember I was printing off a letter of recommendation I had written for one of my softball players. And my printer was out of ink. So I just stopped at the library and want a key because I thought, I'll just print it off here. And phone rings, and I'm like, I'm in the library. I'm assuming, you know, it was my mom that was calling. I knew that. But I was assuming she was just going to be like, hey, do you want to meet us for lunch after dad's appointment? Because that's always what they did.
Yeah.
So I let it go to voicemail because I'm like, I got to get this printed off.
It's regular day. Nothing's nothing's going on.
Right. She called back again immediately. So I'm like, something's up. So I answered it, and she's like, you need to come down here. He's going to be here for a little while. Like, something went wrong, but they're going to keep him overnight, and I think you need to come down here. Well, she knew that he was gone.
He was already gone at that time.
She was just trying to get me down there without panicking me. And I'm like, okay, well, that's odd. So I, you know, grabbed the paper, you know, left the 25 cents to pay for it. Yeah. Got in the car, and I called her immediately. I'm like, what's up? She's like, he didn't make it. I'm like, he didn't make it to his appointment? I don't understand. Like, what do you mean? No, he didn't make it. There were complications, and he didn't make it. I'm going to let you talk to the doctor now, or the nurse, and somebody that can explain it. And, I mean, I'm driving from Wanakee down Highway M, getting to Allen Boulevard, and I have no idea how I got to the hospital. Is one of those things where you just don't even know what you're doing, where you're going. And this lady's rattling off everything that went wrong. And I'm like, yeah, I got it. He's gone. I get that. I need to make calls now. Like, so I kind of brushed her off. And I remember calling my best friend, Beth, at the time, and just saying, it went to voicemail because, again, it was a Monday. Everybody had their own stuff they were doing.
Yeah. Well, who calls the bad news in the middle of the day? I mean, what?
Right. It always is 3 o'clock in the morning, usually.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's a regular day. You're never expecting, oh, this is my 2 p.m.
Right.
Monday bad news message.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just left a message. I'm like, I guess I don't know how to say it. And I guess I don't even know why I'm calling you, but my dad died, and I'm going down to the hospital now. And I probably should have told you in person or, like, got you on the phone. But I know if it were you, I would want you to call and leave the message, too. And I, you know, also remember texting Charlotte. And just, my dad just died. It was that cut and dry because you're just numb. It's such a disbelief. And I remember getting down there and just thinking, man, this is not real. And then, you know, going into the room, having him lead me into the room, and he's there. He's not alive. He's right there dead on the table. And I just hugged my mom. And, I mean, my face is wet from crying, but it's more just like, I think it's just the reaction because I wasn't. Yeah, totally. And then kind of kicking into that, what do we have to do now? like, there's people that need to know that we have to get the word out to. And, you know, I got a text back from my friend that I had called, and she's like, I don't know if you need anything. I'm just out in my car in the ramp. So if you need to talk or anything, that's where I am. I don't want to intrude or invade. And I'm like, get in here. Like, you're not going to step on any moments. It's just going to be easier. So she came in, and I remember knowing that, you know, one of us had to call my brother, and my mom fortunately took care of that. I called my dad's brother, who lives across the street from us, and just, there's no time for sugarcoating anything when you're going through that. And I kind of feel bad now because there's so many people that I was just so abrupt with. It was, dad's dead. I mean, and that was it. And it's just, it's that thing that you always know is the worst moment of your life.
Where were you when it hit you?
When it clicked?
Because, I mean, because clearly it wasn't hitting you. You realized what was going on. But
yeah.
Your brain, what our brains do sometimes is to make up for, to hide an emotional trauma,
right.
We'll go into planning mode.
Yeah.
How it is
we
get through this.
Exactly.
Year. Where were you at when it
finally hit? Like, it was probably 2 or 3 days later, and he had a dog, and his dog was a Jack Russell Terrier named Batman. And you always hear about how, you know, animals sense that stuff, and then they go. So I was fully prepared to get home that night and find Batman gone. Because also, Batman was like 1,000 years old. I mean, at the time, he was 15 years old, but that's pretty old for a dog.
Almost 200 for dogs.
Right.
I'm no math doctor, but
that's old.
That's old.
That's old. So I was fully prepared for that, and then it actually, he was fine. Like, he was sprightly and running around, and it just didn't process. I think, you know, there are moments where you're like, yeah, it's true, it's real, but probably didn't hit till the summer when I think it hit Batman. And he just, like, you've never seen a dog cry or sob or howl, but he did all those things. And it was like that was the moment he realized dad wasn't coming home. Because he just always would look at me like, he always comes home.
Must be at work or something. Must be on vacation.
But he always comes home. But then after so many months, I think it finally set in with him. And then he would just start pacing and wandering. And I think he was looking for him.
And then that's when it hits.
And that's when it kind of finally hit me. Yeah. So.
You know, that's a sad story. And that's one thing that sucks is that, you know, a lot of us realize that, you know, and there's no way to go through it to make it. There really isn't no way to go through it to make it easy.
No.
You know, because your parents are your protectors. And, you know, it's, I always say this, it's much better for a child to bury a parent than a parent to bury a child. That
right.
is, you know,
oh,
that is devastating.
Yeah.
And that's something that we have to prepare ourselves for when we're getting older, but doesn't make it any easier.
No.
You know, but one thing I always tell people about this and something I've been realizing, because my family and things are getting older, and, you know, my dad, every day that my dad's alive, honestly, it's like, goddamn miracle.
I love you, Chuck.
No idea what's going on with that guy. Not that I want him to die, but him and I, we laugh about it all the time.
Right.
Like, we had a conversation, and he goes, I didn't plan on making it past 55. You know, and he's like 67 now. We're like, we financially didn't plan this far ahead,
right.
to be honest with you.
Right.
You know, but, you know, when those things happen, you know, you think about the great memories that you have and how much a better person you are because you're around them. And he obviously was a wonderful influence on you and, you know, obviously was the linchpin right there in your family that, you know, that you guys always, always have, you know, those great memories.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I always tell people is, you know, and even when I go, you know, for don't mourn the loss because it's not that big of a loss.
Celebrate,
you know, for me, you know, when I'm gone.
Would be a huge loss.
I doubt that.
Yeah,
be like, thank God he sucked. You know, celebrate the life, you know, that was there. Like my dad, I have plans for my dad when he dies. And he goes, just a couple things that he wants in the parking lot. He wants drinking. And I'm going to have to edit this word out. This is literally in his words that he has on a piece of paper. I want drinking and motherfucking in the parking lot.
I can totally, based on what you've told me about him, that does not surprise me.
And what mother is, if you don't know, is people giving each other shit. That's what he wants. He wants a bunch of drinking and going on in the parking lot. And it won't be easy as we go through that. But you got to think that you're a stronger person that you went through that.
Yeah.
You're a stronger person because they got to be around you. And obviously he had a great influence in your life. I mean, you're a Cubs fan. And that comes from somebody.
Yeah. He's also a Vikings fan. He likes to root for the...
Is he really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, he must have been a sweetheart to overcome those two things.
Well, he went to Vietnam, and somebody on the plane, when he was going over there, told him the Vikings won the Super Bowl. That was the one time the Vikings were in the Super Bowl. So he's over there in Vietnam believing his Vikings won the Super Bowl. And my mom, the sweetheart that she is like, no, they didn't. They didn't. He's like,
sorry to tell you, honey, no.
He's like, you're lying. And so they exchange letters back and forth. Finally, my mom reaches out to the local sports guy, like that does the sports for, I think, Channel 3 or Channel 15. Like, my husband's in Vietnam. He thinks the Vikings won the Super Bowl. So this guy sends it on, you know, station letterhead. I'm sorry, sir, but the Vikings did not win. I'm like, I mean, I applaud it. Like, that's really, but you had to kick him while he's down. He's already over in a hellhole, and now you're.
He became a blue star or a gold star family due to a football team. Like, normally you get that, like, we're sorry to inform you. He's like, we're sorry to inform you that your football team still sucks.
They still
go
suck.
Go Packers.
Exactly.
Well, enough of the sad stuff. So you've got vaguely what you've got going on right now. And you're looking for a new adventure right now. What is it that we can vaguely paint this picture of what you're trying to? Is it like, is it still with athletics is what it is you're trying to do?
Yes, yes. That for sure. And it's
so
still,
youth athletics is what your goal is to work in that.
Yeah.
And a bit more of a controlled environment that you have control of?
Yes, yes. And I think ultimately wherever I end up, will hopefully be continuing to do good stuff and help people. Because I feel like that's kind of what we're all here for. And if we can figure out a way, if I can figure out a way to still, you know, make a difference for somebody, that's what I want to do. I don't want to just make money. That's never been who I am. Yeah, is money nice? Do I need money? Sure, I do. But it's not what drives me 100%.
You know, I got to go to one of your practices, and I got to do a few things, and you had your awareness night to benefit Geo's Garden. You had then one to benefit my nonprofit, Jackson's Community Action Fund, and we had bad weather, but Lodi still turned out.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have happened without the organization of you and the parents that are involved in that, and the players and all that stuff, and the other team for coming out and playing a game in the rain.
Right.
I mean, congratulations to all that, but I got to give you some serious credit about what it is that you're able to do. I was there in a practice with you guys. We shot an episode of Grilled Cheese Weekly on there, and you were you're doing a little bit of field work. You're hitting the ball, all right, and then you did one where you hit it straight up, and your pitcher dove into the dirt right in front of her to get that ball, and I was like, that girl was just like, you don't see anyone do that kind of stuff anymore,
right?
But you're still able to get that out of these kids, and that is 100% a talent that other people don't have, an asset I think that any kid or parent would love to have around and near them. And I think it's not something that we see a lot in this world, that you're able to pull that out of people.
Well, thank you.
Not everybody wakes up being able to be great. They're great because other people make them great. You had great people in your life to help you do that, and you've been able to turn that around. And I think it's wonderful because, like you said, it's not an easy road to hoe.
No.
And it's not always the most thankful.
Right.
And it's not also always the most financially rewarding or lucrative by any means.
Right.
You know, nobody goes into those kind of things. Nobody goes into educating, whether it be inside a classroom or on a ball diamond, to make money.
Not at all.
You're not doing that. And people need to really realize that.
And
what
really,
it is they've got, the people that are taking that time, dedication, and their own money to do those kind of things.
And there's not a teacher in this world that gets into teaching for the chance to screw a kid over. Same with coaches.
Exactly.
It's just, that's not how it works. For such little pay, you wouldn't do that. And I don't know. I hope the culture kind of stops where it's evolving to and kind of goes backwards a little bit to where we let coaches coach, we let officials officiate, because those are two major crises right now that are facing this state in particular.
Mm-hmm.
The WIA's always got notes out like, we need more umpires, we need more officials. Why is there such a shortage? Well, go and watch a youth game. Go and watch a high school game. That umpire is getting harassed all the time. And that's why, if a call's really bad, I might be like, really? But I'm not going to go out and argue toe-to-toe because, number one, you look like a moron when you do that.
You got kicked out of a game before it started one time.
Yeah, you did tell me that.
Yeah. Ooh.
For me, it's just it's not my style because I know that guy is not out there to try and hose us.
That's right.
That lady isn't out there trying to make a bad call. They're doing it because they love the sport and they want to give back because officials only make a little bit more than the coaches do, and it's still not a lot. So let's just... Everybody know your role.
I think as a society that something we all need to work on in ourselves and with everything else is balance. You know, a lot of barriers have been broken down in the last 10, 15 years, and that's a wonderful thing. But when those barriers came down, we went bull in a china shop.
Oh, yeah.
On some of them. And there's always collateral damage. You can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs.
Right.
And we broke a hen house full of eggs.
Yeah.
And we need to kind of put some of them eggs back together. We don't need to bring up the antiquated ways of doing things.
Right.
But we need to find a way to keep some of these old guard ways of doing things.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes the set way is the better way,
right?
Or at least modifying it a little bit. And, well, you know, people out there with that kind of idea, I think, is really where it's at.
Yeah, and if there's protocol in place, like if you're upset about a situation and protocol dictates wait 24 hours before you lodge your complaint, maybe try that because it's protocol for a reason.
Yeah.
But I feel like with email and social media, there's that instant gratification.
Yep. Yep.
I'm outraged, and everybody's going to know in this second how outraged I am because of this idiot umpire or this idiot coach.
Well, my opinion matters, and
it's
the only one that matters, and my feelings matter. And,
right.
We'll end on this here. If you are going to your kid's baseball, softball, soccer, tennis game, and you see something that you don't like, and you feel it's your part to scream at the coach, you're an idiot, and you're wrong. Unless there's something criminal going on.
Right.
You're an idiot, and you're wrong, and I stand behind that message. You are wrong, and you're embarrassing your kid, so stop doing it.
You're not making
the world a better place. People who dedicate their time to do this kind of stuff, they kind of know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So let them go do it. Well, Coach, I appreciate you coming in and sitting in. I appreciate you telling your story. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you telling me about your dad. I appreciate you being out there. And I think that if we have more people like you out in the world, we're not in such bad shape. You know, something I always talk about is the drop in the pond. And, you know, we ain't never going to be able to make huge waves. But if we drop a pond and it ripples across and everybody does that, boy, we'll change the whole surface of that lake. And that's
really
all that matters. And it'll make a difference. So thank you so much. This has been another episode of Jackson's American Tales, Ordinary People with Extraordinary Life Tales.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Jackson's American Tales. As you've learned from this, if you know a youth coach, give them a big hug. They are doing a service for our community. If you enjoyed this episode, please click share. Let your friends know about it. They may enjoy it as well. And coming up next week, we've got a guy who's become a big-time friend of today's Q106, Jason Hafeman. We're going to find out how a small-town boy and why a small-town boy went to college for communications, but then turned things around and ended up being a part of one of the biggest nonprofits in the area, Project Home. They do so much wonderful stuff. Jason's got a very, very fun story, and it's honestly a really fun conversation. So tune in next week for Jackson's American Tales.